From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. And next hour, those open lines with the El Fago Baca Hotline. That'll have you scrambling to try to figure out just who the heck that is. Some of you will know. Tropical storm Kyle now is maintaining its strength as it chugs north in the open Atlantic and could become a hurricane over the weekend. The National Hurricane Center says Kyle's top sustained winds are 60 miles an hour, and that's how strong they've been since early Friday. Kyle now is the 11th named storm this season in the Atlantic. House and Senate lawmakers express confidence now that they were back on track with a financial bailout plan and would be able to hammer out an agreement this weekend. Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid said he hoped to have a proposal ready for a vote early Monday, possibly before the markets open up, which could mark a turnaround from what appeared to be a collapse of negotiations Thursday evening. The speed of these negotiations could give Democrats cover, they say, that the huge government buyout of bad debt isn't on their shoulders alone, and it also could allow Republicans to say that they did their due diligence to protect you. But there is little support for President Bush's $700 billion federal rescue plan for the U.S. financial industry, and little expectation that it could solve the crisis that has roiled the markets and hobbled some of the country's largest investment firms. According to a poll released on Friday, just 30% of the Americans polled said that they support the president's package. Alan Fishman, well, he was the new chief executive officer for Washington Mutual, the nation's largest savings and loan, which was taken over Thursday night by federal bank regulators and quickly dumped in a fire sale to J.P. Morgan Chase for the price of $1.9 billion. Even though he's only been on the job for less than 3 weeks, he's bailing out with a parachute worth close to $20 million. $20 million for 17 days on the job, and his company failed. Fishman, who was formerly chairman of the Meridian Capital Group, apparently was much coveted by Washington Mutual folks, which was counting on him to lead the failing thrift out of mortgage troubles that pushed the bank to a $3.3 billion second quarter loss. In their first debate of the 2008 presidential campaign, Senators John McCain and Barack Obama immediately discarded the scheduled topic of foreign affairs and moved into a discussion of the nation's financial crisis, with both saying that they are optimistic that Congress will agree on a financial bailout plan in the coming days. McCain and Obama slated to meet two more times in the coming weeks, with debates scheduled for October 7 in Nashville, October 15 at Hofstra University in New York. The vice presidential candidates, Alaska Governor Sarah Palin and Senator Joseph Biden, scheduled to debate Thursday in St. Louis. Dr. John Curtis, editor of OnlineColumnist.com, he watched the debates tonight. John, tell me, what was your immediate reaction to what you saw and heard?
Well, I mean, it was the debate about the debate that was going on right before. You know, was McCain going to show up? Was he not going to show up? Was he really there doing his shuttle diplomacy? And finally, they were saying, look, you know, your presence is not really wanted in Washington, so go and debate, you know. And so here it was. They two stood on the same stage, the neophyte Obama and the vaunted McCain with all his reservoir of experience, all the years he's had. And, you know, I think the bottom line outcome, George, of this debate was that Obama was on the same stage as McCain talking foreign policy. Well, first part of the debate, they were talking the economy, which is, you know, this bailout plan and, you know, what they intend to do. But the overall impression was, I think, that Obama held his own with McCain on foreign policy.
But but for both of them, John, my impression as I was watching this, they didn't seem to have the pizzazz that I expected them to have tonight. First time out of the shoot, I expected to see something a little more dramatic.
Absolutely. I mean, this was pretty boring, I think, when you consider the high wire act that is going on in the economy and how high the stakes are. I mean, we're a razor's edge close to a potential confrontation with Russia a few weeks ago. And Sarah Palin, you know, stating that we're now all Georgians, and then them touching upon, and I'm talking about Obama as well, talking about how they're going to confront the aggressive Russian menace right now and talking tough about the Russians. Neither of them would tell the truth that it was Georgia that attacked an independent Russian province, prompting the Russian reaction, which cut Georgia in two and then annexed those provinces. But apart from that, I think that you're right. It was a bunch of campaign platitudes, basically. Neither candidate really stepping out and really dazzling anyone.
Actually, John, I'm looking forward to seeing the vice presidential debates when they happen. Thanks again, John Curtis, onlinecolumnist.com. Ailing Senator Edward Kennedy, patriarch of America's most storied political family, was examined and released from a Massachusetts hospital after suffering a mild seizure. The 76-year-old Massachusetts Democrat was diagnosed with brain cancer in May. Doctors believe this incident was triggered by a change in medication for him. China's taikonauts are making final preparations in their country's first spacewalk on Saturday. That's going to happen in about 3.5 hours or so. China's third manned mission to space launched off on Thursday. I was doing a little research into U.S. astronauts. And did you know that since the whole program started for the astronauts, beginning now in October of 1964, because of either mission, during training, or other activities while in the U.S. astronaut program, we have had 25 astronauts die, either because of the mission, during training, or during other activities. 25. I didn't realize that it was that high. A U.S. cyclist was knocked down by a car and a train in separate accidents within 6 hours of each other. Unlucky Robert Evans, 46 years old from Boulder, Colorado, was first hit by a car in a hit-and-run incident. And Mr. Evans was then taken to a hospital but later released. He was on his way back to town when he was hit by a train while walking his bicycle across a railroad bridge. He was later found down there in a creek and again taken to the hospital. His injuries were not life-threatening. Must have been a bad nightmare for him. And speaking of dreams, up next, Robert Wagoner, our guest, as we talk about lucid dreaming. He's next on Coast to Coast AM. Robert Wagoner, president-elect of the International Association for the Study of Dreams and a graduate of Drake University, degree in psychology. For the past 7 years, he's been the co-editor of the online journal, The Lucid Dream Exchange, the only ongoing publication devoted specifically to lucid dreaming. Here he is this hour on Coast to Coast. Robert, how are you?
Just fine, George. Thanks very much for having me on.
Likewise indeed. Dreaming, very powerful way for people, I think, to get things done for their day-to-day activities and even, I think, glancing into the future. Your take on lucid dreaming, the definition, of course.
You know, lucid dreaming is when we become consciously aware while dreaming that we're in a dream. So it's not necessarily a vivid dream. Oftentimes people will be talking about vivid dreams as being very lucid, but the essential characteristic is you must be consciously aware that you're dreaming while you're in the dream.
Robert, is it the brain or is it some form of consciousness that allows us to realize, hey, you're dreaming, you're in a dream, you can control it, or you can just participate, but you know you're in a dream? What does that?
You know, that's an excellent question. A lot of your listeners might not realize that the field of psychology is split on whether we have a mind or not. They believe we have a brain. Almost everyone's concluded we have a brain, but whether or not we have a mind is a question that's still debated in the field of psychology. I think lucid dreaming actually has something to say about that, because the way this was first scientifically proven was back in 1975. Keith Hearn, who is a researcher at the University of Hull in England, had a lucid dreamer, Alan Worsley, hooked up in a sleep laboratory. And so what they did, they realized that when you're sleeping, the part of you that really isn't paralyzed is your eyes. Your eyes have rapid eye movement, which normally indicates that you're dreaming. So what they did is they put polygraph pads on the eyes to monitor the REM state, and they made an agreement that when Alan Worsley became lucidly aware in the dream, he would look from left to right 8 times in a row and suddenly, by doing that, indicate that he was consciously aware in the dream state.
Huh.
So that's how they scientifically proved it. Up until that point, it was considered kind of in the field of parapsychology or something that spiritual traditions like Buddhism occasionally mentioned. But it wasn't really until 1975 that it was proven. And then, of course, Stephen LaBerge in 1978 came along at the University of Stanford and separately conducted his own experiment using himself as a subject and indicated in the same sort of way. He realized that if he shifted his eyes from side to side, he could indicate on that polygraph, on that rim readout, that he was consciously aware in the dream state. And so Stephen LaBerge was the first one to really publish his work in a scientific journal such that he became most identified with this and the science of it.
Robert, what triggers it? Duress? The need for something to happen tremendously in our lives? What's the trigger point here for lucid dreaming?
You know, there's a number of trigger points that one could suggest, but for many of us, it's just something that we taught ourselves. So it's a learnable skill, and it's something that most anyone who remembers their dreams and has an interest and a desire in becoming consciously aware in the dream state can do. But sometimes, to your question, currently some psychotherapists at least, teach people with post-traumatic stress disorder who are having recurring nightmares how to become consciously aware in the dream state so that they can, when they're consciously aware in the dream, talk to the dream figure that's chasing them, the recurring nightmare figure, and find out what it wants or what the issue is. And normally once they do that, once they become consciously aware just one time and confront that hostile, menacing figure, they never have that nightmare again. So even therapists have seen that it's very very powerful. But so oftentimes people become consciously aware when they see something frightful. Sometimes they become consciously aware when they see a deceased relative. They realize grandma's been dead for 20 years. This must be a dream. Sometimes they become consciously aware when they see something odd, like I can remember seeing fish swimming through the air down the street. And I thought, fish don't swim in the air. Wait a second. And then I realized, of course, this is a dream. So you have those kind of things that can encourage you to become consciously aware, is by noticing odd characteristics, noticing things that can't be in physical reality, like deceased people, or pre-preparing yourself with the intent to go after that nightmare figure when it reappears, because it only appears in the dream state.
Well, and sometimes, Robert, when I was younger, I would have one of these lucid dreams, and I'd realize that whatever was going on in this dream was a dream. And, you know, if it was something scary as a little kid, or if it was something that you wanted to change, you probably could do that by realizing, hey, you're in a dream. It's an incredible tool, isn't it?
Oh, you know, it's a fascinating tool, because I don't think we've realized the revolutionary potential of this particular tool. I remember reading in the history of science, there's a Van Leeuwenhoek helped perfect the microscope. He didn't invent the microscope. He helped perfect it. Up until that time, microscopic lenses would only give about 20 times resolution. But Van Leeuwenhoek, who actually wasn't a scientist, he was a businessman, but he was very curious about the microscopic world, he went in and started to grind the lenses so that he could see at 200 times magnification. And as he did so, he began to see that, oh, now he could identify protozoa was different than a nematode, which was different than a bacteria. And he could go through the microscopic world and really see it much more clearly for the first time. And that's how I think people should think of lucid dreaming as well. It's a psychological tool to look more deeply into dreaming, or the state of dreaming, which many people call the unconscious or subconscious mind.
Didn't the late Swiss psychiatrist Carl Jung Did he not look into this entire field?
Well, Carl Jung had a very extensive life history investigating dreams. He was a protege, of course, of Sigmund Freud at the beginning, but then he and Freud
went their separate ways
on a number of issues. And he continued to look into it quite deeply, dreaming on a very, very deep level. But I really wonder if Carl Jung had an awareness and an experience with lucid dreaming of any depth. I'm sure he was aware of it, that it existed, that some people claimed it existed. But, of course, at that time, it wasn't proven. It was considered parapsychology. It was considered part of a spiritualistic or spiritual tradition. And even though Carl Jung investigated spiritual traditions quite a bit, you just don't see him really writing that much about being consciously aware in the dream state.
Do you see precognitive dreams totally different from lucid dreaming, or are there some similarities there?
Well, now, precognitive dreams are something that Carl Jung talked about, and oftentimes he called them prodromal dreams, and prodromal is a word that means running ahead. He said that the unconscious could, in a sense, project ahead, that with the current way that the psychic system was going, this and this and this event was probably likely to occur, because the awareness of the unconscious mind was that deep. So in a sense, when he talked about precognitive dreams, they were more, in his sense, kind of forward-looking dreams. Now in a general sense, The difference between precognitive dreams and lucid dreaming is that in a precognitive dream, normally you have the dream, you might recognize that it's unusual or especially powerful, and then 2 or 3 days later or a week later, something happens, and you run back to your dream journal, and you go, look, I wrote it here a week ago. But in a lucid dream, you can do something relatively profound, and this is something that I don't think the field of parapsychology has considered. In a lucid dream, you can become consciously aware and seek out forward-looking information.
If you can do that, how can you apply it then in your day-to-day real living when you're not dreaming?
Well, it has a wide application. People who do this begin to think differently about time and space. No longer is time and space this linear mechanistic system. All of a sudden, it seems much more loose and amorphous. And so in that way, they mentally expand their concept of this reality and their appreciation of it. And then you can also do it to get previews of coming attractions. That's normally what I call them. You can look ahead, peer ahead. Now, I do want to say that when I use the term precognition, I'm not talking about a destined fate. When I talk about precognition, I'm using it in the way that Jane Roberts, who wrote the Seth material, used it, which is looking forward in a probabilistic sense. So you get information that's very highly likely to occur, but it's not guaranteed to occur. And in that way, you get around the issue of free will and also the issue of fate and destiny, which I think doesn't really hold water.
So that though, does not mean that someone can actually look into the future that way?
I'm sorry?
Can someone look into the future through those kinds of dreams?
Oh, sure. In lucid dreams, you can look into the future and get future or forward-looking information. But once again, it's probabilistic. It's not necessarily going to happen, but there's just a higher probability that it may happen. And the way you can prove that, George, is you become lucidly aware, you get the information, you wake up with the information, you write it down as best you can, and then you provide it to a fair witness, and you wait for the day to occur.
Can people be trained to do lucid dreaming at will?
Oh, certainly. A lot of people have learned just by reading books. Myself, back in 1975, I was a junior in high school, and I was reading one of my brothers had come home from the University of Kansas, and He had the book Journey to Ixtlan by Carlos Castaneda. And in there, Carlos Castaneda is talking to Don Juan, who some people say is a fictional character, but other people say, no, he's for real. And Don Juan tells Carlos he wants him to set up dreaming. And Carlos asks him, what do you mean, set up dreaming? And he goes, tonight in your dreams, I want you to see your hands. And so Carlos and he begin to talk, and the basic idea is really kind of a stimulus response idea.
Absolutely. Stay with us. Robert Wagoner, our guest, will be back in a moment. We'll continue talking about dreams and also take your calls on Coast to Coast AM. We're going to take your phone calls in just a moment, but first let's bring in our own Ian Punnett, who will tell you what's in store on Coast to Coast AM Saturday night. Ian, how are you?
Good, George. You watch any of the debate tonight?
Yeah, I did. I did. For me, kind of uneventful. I thought it should have been a little more dramatic, Ian, and
well,
I didn't see
it. I was listening to it without having seen it, and so I just had a chance to see it. And it's interesting how when you hear it and then see it, it's a kind of a different experience.
Yes, absolutely.
Like, when I was listening to it, I kept picturing Barack Obama wearing a turtleneck and a corduroy jacket because he sounded like he was a professor, and I kept picturing McCain wearing a little sheriff's outfit because he kept talking about being the sheriff. And then I look at it on TV, and they're just wearing suits.
Just suits.
I'm kind of disappointed. It was more fun to listen to. But everything they talked about tonight, we're getting to tomorrow night. First we'll do a first hour on how people are still reacting to this bailout.
Oh, yeah.
And we'll stay up to date on that. But also, did you hear him talking about Russia and Putin and some of the things that are happening right now when everybody else is focused on Wall Street? And David Hagberg will be on with us tomorrow night. The book is Mutiny. Now, in that book, he tells the true story that the hunt for Red October was based on. He's got one of the Russians who is on the ship that the event actually transpired on, and he'll tell the true story, but David Hagberg is an expert on Russia and the Russian military, and we'll be going deep on exactly what Putin is up to and what we can expect to happen in the next 3 or 4 months.
The bear is flexing its muscles, isn't it?
Exactly, and it is very, while everybody else is looking at the fire over here, could be a nuclear bomb blowing over there, and we'll talk about that soon.
You got it. Thanks, Ian, and we'll be back.
Thanks,
in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. We're with Robert Wagoner this hour. We're going to take your phone calls. Robert, the International Association for the Study of Dreams, exactly what does this organization do?
Right. It's a member organization with about 600 members. It's interesting in that it's kind of like the Society of Astronomy. It allows interested non-professionals into our organization. So we have academics who are interested in the field of psychology and dreams. We have neurophysiologists who do research on dreams and neurophysiology, dreams and sleep. And we also have a lot of psychotherapists and people from that tradition. But then there's also people like myself, and I do want to make clear that the points that I'm making today and the points that I make in my book, Lucid Dreaming, Gateway to the Inner Self, are my specific opinions. It's not anything that the organization necessarily approves or agrees with. We do have a scientific or a refereed journal publication called Dreaming, which I believe is the only scientific refereed journal in existence on the study of dreams.
People have healed themselves in their dream state, too, haven't they?
That's right. In my book, I devote a chapter to people who become consciously aware or lucid in the dream state and then direct healing energy onto their disability.
Incredible gift. Let's go to some calls. We'll go to first-time caller Terry in Portland, Oregon. Welcome to Coast. Hi, Terry.
George, I can't believe I actually made it the first time. I've listened to you guys for probably 10 years.
I bet you dreamed you would get in.
I should have. I don't know where to start. I got to say hi to my friends at Freedom Crow's Nest if I go by Zippy, but get that out of the way. I'm a little nervous.
Yeah.
When I was about 16, I started meditating. And a byproduct of that was I would spontaneously realize I was just awake in my dreams. And all through my childhood, I used to have these shadowy figures, you know, a recurring dream where they would be chasing me, and I would try to run from them, and, you know, you kind of have these flying dreams. But when I was 16 and I had these experiences with the lucid dreaming, I actually realized I was awake and I could control my dreams. And I finally decided that I would just turn and face these creatures, and they disappeared and it ended.
You beat them.
And I beat them. And it actually changed not just my dream state and my dream life, it actually had an effect on my outer life.
Robert, that happens, doesn't it?
Right. You know, and I'm so glad Terry or Zippy called that psychotherapists are using this quite convincingly, and even parents could use this to help their children with nightmares. As soon as you become consciously aware in the dream and turn and face that frightful dream figure, almost invariably you'll never have that nightmare again. It's almost as if the psychological self, by turning and facing it, comes to understand what it's been dealing with, and just in that understanding resolves the issue.
Let's go to Oklahoma City. Logan, welcome to Coast to Coast. You're on with Robert Wagoner. Hi, Logan.
Hello. Hey, it's great to be on.
Thank you.
I thought I'd tell the quick, sequence of events and then get some input on that.
Sure.
Last night I had been researching some of the possibility of martial law in this country due to the impending financial collapse, or, you know, whatever you want to call it, crisis.
It's very wise to do that because you never know.
Yeah, on the preparedness and just becoming less worldly and more caring for ourselves and others around us. But I was also wondering that last night, after researching all this, I knew I'd have a bunch of nightmares that night, after which, I did. And I woke up early this morning, earlier than I have ever before, but then I went back to sleep. And I was late for cybersecurity class for the first time this semester, I guess it was. But anyhow, today, then, I was researching pretty much all day. I've been going on this stuff and looking at Nibiru and the Solar Maxim coming up. And I just got turned on to this stuff more recently, and just through information I found online. And I just thought that it turned me back to these, as I was thinking this, you know, I was seeing this information online, I was wondering if it had an effect, whenever the Solar Maximum came, if it had an effect on the brain waves and the human consciousness and sleep patterns and et cetera. And then,
well, you know, it might, Logan. There's a strong possibility that when all this starts, and again, I think we're leading up to major solar celestial events, that they could affect your brain. There's no doubt. We know electromagnetic waves affect your brain as well. With lucid dreaming, Robert, have you found that anything technical can affect it? Any kind of outside influence can affect it?
Sure. There's a couple of outside influences that might affect lucid dreaming. Stephen LaBerge and his associates created the dream nightlight, which a person would wear at night as they go to sleep. It's kind of a mask. And it would be able to identify when the person was in rapid eye movement, and then it would flash red lights while the person was in rapid eye movement. If the person was consciously aware, there's a good chance, well, if a person was dreaming at that time, there's a good chance that they would have red lights appear in their dream state. And then if they put it together that red lights meant that they were dreaming, then they could become consciously aware. Also, sometimes people have considered using certain chemicals to try to enhance their lucid dreaming. But you have to be a little bit careful there because some of the herbs aren't really regulated very well and might give you a little bit more than you're expecting.
Let's go to Tom in Mississippi, east of the Rockies. Tom, go for it.
Hey, man, I love your show. I really do.
Thank you, Tom.
I've been listening for about 11 years now. Great.
You're one of the first supporters. Thank you.
Oh, man, I tell you. Anyway, I have dreams that are kind of like series on television, you know, like discontinuations. And, I mean, it's so real. I'm participating in everything in all these dreams. None of them are really, you know, scary dreams. it's just like in a fantasy world type deal. But the only thing missing before I wake up is the little caption saying "to be continued." You know, cause I can have the dream, you know, one night, and then maybe a couple of weeks later, I think about it, and I'll go back to sleep, and it'll just continue on. So I'm just kind of wondering what's the heck's going on with that.
You know, I think this phenomenon is something that people who pay attention to their dreams realize that sometimes you get involved in dream series where you recognize the characters from the night before and that sort of thing. For us lucid dreamers, there's an interesting story that St. Augustine, back around 400 A.D., reported about a physician in Carthage who became consciously aware in the dream state after he saw a dream figure that he'd seen the night before. And so the dream figure started asking him, "Well, where did you see me?" And the person who was having the dream said, "Well, in the dream state from the night before." And so there's even historical records of people seeing dream figures repeatedly and becoming consciously aware that they're dreaming as a result.
Ever have a dream where it, like he says, to be continued, great dream, then you wake up, but you've got the ability to get back into the dream and pick up where you left off the next night? Can that be done?
Yeah, you know, in my book, the last 40 pages I devote to tips and techniques, and some of that is involved in what I call dream re-entry. Oftentimes when I became consciously aware that I was dreaming, I would be having so much fun and so much fun that I'd get so emotional that I'd wake myself up. And as soon as I woke myself up, I could just kick myself because I wanted to get right back into that dream. So here are some of the techniques that lucid dreamers use to re-enter the dream. First, they put their body on the bed exactly how it was when they woke up. So you don't want to get up and walk around. You want to put your body back exactly how it was. And then try to reimagine the ending of the dream. And now see yourself back in the dream, or see yourself looking from some vantage point within the dream. And if you do that, oftentimes you'll find that you slip right back into that dream and you're there with the same dream characters in the same dream environment.
Next up, let's go to Richard, Las Vegas, in Coast to Coast Land.
George,
hey, Richard.
It's good talking to you.
Been a while. Good to have you with
us. Yes, good to speak to you, sir. Robert, you're exactly right, and that's the way to do it. I've discovered lucid dreaming while I had sleep apnea from PTSD. I got after the Northridge earthquake. I went into shock and then PTSD. And my problem that I have is since I've been using a BiPAP unit. By the way, anyone with sleep apnea, you get a BiPAP unit, you will not dream at all. You'll just go to sleep and wake up. But when I do have these dreams, they're all different, and I can't quite figure out the moral to the story. I mean, sometimes I've had dreams of being on a road in my car and almost crashing, and then just saying, "Heck, I'm going to go for it." And I've crashed the car, and I've walked away, and I feel like I've conquered the dream. And I haven't had that dream since that time, but I have different ones, some relating to the earthquake, and I don't quite know how to handle these things. Here in Las Vegas, there are no psychologists or people that I can go to.
What can he do? Where can he go, Robert?
Right. So when you're consciously aware in the dream state, Richard, if you get back into that, well, what you might want to suggest to yourself is that you can ask the dream to tell you about the symbolism of the dream. You can ask either dream figures that are there in the dream to explain, "Hey, why did I crash that car?" Or "What do earthquakes signify to me?" And see what kind of information you get as a result. Or you can just announce in the dream that you'll no longer be bothered by earthquakes, that it happened a long time ago, and it's no longer an issue for you in your psyche.
Let's go to Nikki in Tucson, Arizona. Welcome to Coast to Coast. Hey, Nikki.
Hey, George.
How are you?
Robert.
Good.
Hi.
How are you? My question is for Robert. I'm wondering if... oh, I'm scared. Hold on a second. I'm wondering if you have ever had a lucid dream and changed the future in your dream.
You know,
I have done that before many times.
It's interesting. In my book, I bring up a lucid dream that really shocked me. What happened in the lucid dream, I was consciously aware I was dreaming, and all of a sudden I see a friend of mine. Her name is Mo, and she comes walking into this restaurant where I'm consciously aware in the dream state. And so I go over and I pick her up and I fly just a little bit to show her that we're dreaming. I go, look, Mo, we're dreaming. But she has this kind of glassy-eyed look on her face like she's not getting it. And finally, after I keep trying to convince her that we're dreaming, I go, look, Mo. And what I do is I put the peace sign right in front of her eyes. And I go, Mo, you can always use the peace sign to help you become lucidly aware. So I wake up. Anyway, about 3 months later, I'm out in California in the Bay Area, and I think about Mo, and I call her up and see if she's free for lunch. We get together for lunch, and I'm waiting outside the restaurant as Mo comes walking down the sidewalk. And as she comes walking down the sidewalk, she walks right up to me and puts the peace sign right in my face, just like I had done in the lucid dream. So it really blew my mind because I hadn't told her anything about that. And I asked her, why'd you do that? And she goes, I don't know. I just felt like it. So you really wonder sometimes if you can actually influence the future or influence the physical reality when you're consciously aware in the dreams.
Robert, where do you get your book, Lucid Dreaming?
You know, Lucid Dreaming, Gateway to the Inner Self, it actually just came out 2 weeks ago. And so... I think it's going to sell out relatively quickly, but what a person would want to do is go to Amazon would probably be the best place or their local bookstore, but you got to be sure you put in my name correctly, Robert Wagoner, W-A-G-G-O-N-E-R.
Absolutely. Let's go to Joe in Pittsburgh. Go ahead, Joe, a few moments for you.
Hey, how you doing?
Good, thanks.
I'm also a first-time caller and a StreamLink member. I love your show.
Thank you, Joe.
And all of you are great. Really quickly, I just have a question for Robert. It's about a lucid dream I had on August 11th. I remember my dreams real good because I keep my dream journal. Anyways, it was a two-part dream. Let's get to it really quick. The first part of the dream, I did the whole flying thing, and then I merged with this tree. I said, I want to see what it feels like to be a tree. So I turned to a tree. But the second part of the dream was what was really amazing. I was in this really big black void, and there was... The only thing that was around me was this very intense white light, like right in front of me. And I said to myself, I want to see what it feels like to merge with the light. So I started to, and then I got scared. And then I realized, I reassured myself. I said, I know I'm dreaming. I can't get hurt. So whenever I re-merge with the light again, starting from my head down to my feet, my whole body just started shaking real crazy. It didn't hurt or anything. And I heard this real distinct buzzing noise. And that's, unfortunately, that caused me to wake up. And I just wanted to get your interpretation, your opinion on that, Robert.
Okay, go ahead, Robert. 1 minute to go.
Okay. You know, Joe, you're obviously a very accomplished lucid dreamer and doing some interesting things. Like in the first section where you merge with the tree, that's when you kind of use lucid dreaming to explore concepts. Now, the big black void, most of us talk about this as either the void because you have this black sparkling area. But white light, oftentimes light seems to be information or intelligence or something like that, and by overcoming your fears and merging with the light, in a deeper sense, you might have been actually merging with a deeper part of your awareness. But as for the buzzing and shaking and all, that's something that occasionally you'll hear people who are having out-of-body experiences mention. It's not something that you hear quite so much from lucid dreamers. So it may have been that you actually were out of body.
Robert, thank you so much for being on the program this hour. We got to get you back for a full program down the line. I'll be back in a moment now as we go into those open lines. I'm George Norrie. This is Coast to Coast AM.